The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox just wrapped up a four-game set with the Tampa Bay Rays, dropping three games out of four. They now stand exactly at 500 at 22-22, and they currently occupy fourth place in the American League East. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to bug me on Twitter, you can find my account at Color of the Iris. Joining me on the show from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Massachusetts, is Jeremy Schilling. Jeremy, how are you?
Frustrated.
Yeah, that seems apt.
Yep.
One of those series.
You can find me on Twitter at JTSchill20. And I know technically this team is probably overachieving a little bit, but it's just frustrating that they get to these points and just can't seemingly make the big play in the last three innings.
Yeah, frustrating series to be sure. I'm with you on that. Also with us on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
Frustrated as always. Tonight just every aspect of this team came back to bite you. The pitching wasn't good enough. The defense wasn't good enough. The offense wasn't good enough for the most part. But yeah, and I'd also like to point out, if it wasn't for Rodriguez, I don't know his first name, the Rays pitcher that was pitching either two or three of those extras, if he didn't forget that there was a base runner on third, we'd have got swept. We would have been 0-4. So thanks to a brain fart, we salvaged the game and we're at 500 at the moment.
Yeah, that would be Manuel Rodriguez, who yet again another pitcher that the Rays have just found, who I've never heard of, and you know, I'm sure they'll make him a closer someday, knowing that organization. So, and where can folks find you and everything else on Twitter?
Yeah, at CushmanMLB is my personal account. At Bastards_Boston is the podcast account, the far busier of the two. Terry Talks Sox is for the Facebook only crowd. You can find me on there. Find us on Instagram. Our YouTube channel has been overhauled drastically in the last couple weeks. Tons of content on there. We're all over the place.
We certainly are, and we certainly have a lot to get into on every platform considering this series, so let's not waste any time. We're going to bring you another bottom five here for this three-game set. Obviously, Red Sox dropping three out of four. Not the result that we wanted, and there's certainly plenty of blame to go around, but we narrowed it down to just five. So, Jeremy, you're in the leadoff spot this week. Who do we got coming in at number five?
The first base tandem of Dominic Smith and Garrett Cooper. So, in the series, they were 5-22. Garrett Cooper is hitting 235. He came in tonight at 206, had a base hit, so he's hitting 235. And Dominic Smith, who's getting the majority of the at-bats, is hitting 167. I mean, guys, it's not any better than Dalbach. It's absolutely terrible, considering first base is a position that most organizations require some level of power. It's typically the guy that can hit that's, you know, maybe for roster reasons isn't DHing. A bigger body, you know. It's inexplicable that there's no plan here. I'm not going to go to management because I always do that. But Dalbec obviously wasn't getting it done. It's about been about, what, 10 days since we've had these two? 10 days with Cooper, 7 days-ish with Smith. Guys, it's just extremely frustrating. It's extremely frustrating. At least one ball that I can recall low on the rough, one of the Rafael errors. And he whiffed it. And I know it's a tough pick, but he just, you know, you got to make those plays. You're in the big leagues. Bail out your shortstop. So, you know, Cooper had the two RBI double tonight. And like I said, Dominic Smith had one hit tonight, but overall it's just an absolute problem.
Terry.
So first base with the Red Sox compared to the rest of the league, we're 22nd in average, 22nd in on base, and our OPS has us ranked 18th. So
I'm shocked it's that high.
Well, and what I was about to get at was Casas did play for a month, so some of those numbers, are credited to him. And he was, the last two or three weeks, he was hitting at a pretty good clip. So it's frustrating. And I just think back to 2017 and 2018, I was never really a big Mitch Moreland guy. Like during the winter, I was always hoping the bar would be a little bit higher. And then, of course, Moreland, you know, as a platoon guy, was phenomenal. And seeing what we're seeing now, it just makes me miss him even more. And this is partially a product of coming into the season with Dahlbeck essentially as your backup, knowing that it was going to fail. There was nothing to suggest he was going to be adequate if needed. So it's frustrating. I will say this, Garrett Cooper is showing signs of waking up. He did have a big hit in the finale tonight, drove in a couple of runs. I think those were the two runs that made it a 5-4 game. Durant ended up hitting the solo shot to tie it, but we'll see, but hopefully next winter they're going to address this a little bit better. And you also have that Nico Cavadas kid, but apparently his defense sucks. So plenty of pop will certainly solve the OPS problem, but bad defense. So it's first base, as I've been harping on over, you know, the course of the season so far. That's the easiest position for most teams to find a solution, but for the Boston Red Sox, it's really hard.
Yeah, I mean, this one, it's hard to really put a ton of blame on Breslow, because as soon as Garrett Cooper was DFA'd, how many of us were screaming on Twitter, like, go get this guy. Casas is hurt. You need a first baseman. Please, anything but Bobby Dahlbeck, go get this guy. And he did one better. He got two. He got Garrett Cooper and he got Dominic Smith, who Dominic Smith at one point was a top prospect for the Mets. The Mets being them, they screwed him up and called him up too early and kind of ruined his development. But he still played almost every game last year at first base for the Nationals. It wasn't that bad. Hit .254, you know, 12 homers, nothing like spectacular. But in Casas' absence, you would take that. You'd take .254 with a little bit of power from a guy like that. So Breslow did his job. He recognized that Casas is going to be hurt for a long time. He recognized that Bobby Dahlbeck can't play at the major league level. He went out and he made moves. He got Garrett Cooper and Dominic Smith. The problem is they're just both asleep right now. And hopefully, like you said, Cooper's starting to show signs of waking up. He's a veteran hitter. So, you know, he should be able to get there at some point. Dominic Smith, I think, has also shown signs too. So maybe we just need to be a little more patient with them. But when you're losing series like this that are there for the taking and they're making errors and they're not coming up in clutch situations, it's that much more glaring of a problem. So again, flawed roster, this is what you get. You go into the season with a flawed roster, you have to improvise and go get guys like this off the waiver wire. There's a reason why they're on the waiver wire. They're not that good. So that's what happens. And I'm glad you brought up Cavadas, because, you know, You people can keep tweeting out highlights of him hitting home runs in AAA all you want, but if the scouting report and if everyone tells you his glove sucks and major league pitching is going to eat him alive, then he's not a prospect. He's not. He's Bobby Dahlbeck, just younger. So I'm sick of hearing about Cavadas too. either call him up and give him a shot, or if he's not that good, don't group him in with all these exciting prospects that you people love to go on about. He's clearly not one of them if they're not willing to give him a shot. So I'm sick of hearing about him too. This is what you're stuck with. It's Dom Smith and Garrett Cooper for the foreseeable future. And you just got to hope that one of, hopefully both of them, wakes up a little bit. And they don't have to go off. Just hit 250 and give us professional at-bats. And don't play like ass clowns at first base. That's all we need until Casas gets back. So, you know, that's a pretty low bar. Hopefully they can clear it, but I'm not sure at this point. So that remains to be seen. So with that, we'll move to number four on our bottom five. Terry, who we got coming in there?
We have Charlie's favorite offseason acquisition, Tyler O'Neill. Now, he did run into one in game one and hit a three-run shot. There was actually runners on base for this one. The bad news is that was one of his only two hits, and that was only the only three runs we scored that game right there in the first inning. We lost that game 5-3. What was ugly about the rest of the series for him was in the next two games, he went 1-for-8 with 7 strikeouts. And then in the third game, got a golden sombrero, which is 4 strikeouts. So promptly got the night off tonight. Cora moved him from 3rd to 5th. I thought that could help a little bit, but it doesn't really seem to matter. His slump is just really vicious at the moment, and he just can't seem to figure it out.
Jeremy.
Yeah, so on April 27th, his average peaked to 333. After the 0-for-4 with 4 Ks, he's hitting 256. He has the 10 home runs, but the far majority of those came early. You know, I feel like the concussion and the laceration on his face kind of changed things for him, you know, and I don't know if it was a rhythm thing. I don't know if he's dealing with post-concussion symptoms. Like, I'm not exactly sure what's going on, but he's just a much different player. 0-for-4 with 4 Ks is a significant indicator that there's a big problem. You know, he's not seeing the ball well. His timing's off. You know, any number of different things could be going on to go over, to not put the ball in play. I mean, it, you know, and a team that's starved for offense. So this series, we were 30 for 135, which is a 222 clip. It sucks to put a guy in the middle of the lineup that's not hitting. And because there's no organizational depth, you know, you guys, I'm a Wong guy, big time Wong guy, but you have Wong hitting the middle of the lineup. Today, Ref Snyder was hitting third. Like, you need production from that player and you're not getting it. And it's highlighted because this lineup can't hit for the most part. So he needs to hit. We need him to hit. We're not going to bump up over 500 without him being a key contributor. And when he's not, we're going to lose games.
Welcome to the Tyler O'Neill experience, because this is kind of what it is. One game, he hits a monster home run, drives in 3. You know, you're happy to have him kind of at least somewhere near the middle of your lineup, a good right-handed power bat. Next game, 0-for-4, golden sombrero. And, I mean, the last strikeout, it was just 3 straight fastballs right down the middle from Pete Fairbanks. Fairbanks was like, I'm not throwing this guy anything but a fastball down the middle because I can throw it 98 and he's not catching up to it today. Now, maybe another day O'Neill does, but whatever Fairbanks and the Rays saw, they're like, yeah, he doesn't have it today. Just throw it right down the pipe. He's going to chase it and he's not going to catch up to it. So that's concerning because you should be able to catch up to, I know it's 98, but like, you should be able to catch that up to that right down the middle, especially when you kind of know it's coming. So definitely a concern. He's definitely regressed a little bit. Am I still glad that he's here? Yes. You gave up nothing for him. and you need right-handed power other than Connor Wong. So I'll still take him. I'm actually glad that Cora gave him the day off in the finale, because that guy going back to St. Louis this weekend, hopefully he's in store for some revenge games against his old team and his old ballpark. So give him the day off, let him get pumped up for the St. Louis series. But it's just kind of the way it's going to be with O'Neill this season. He's going to be, you know, at times he'll deliver that big home run that, you know, is going to get everyone pumped up. Other times you're going to have games like that where he just goes 0-for-4, doesn't do anything. The batting average continues to drop. And a lot of people will say, oh, Tyler O'Neill, he's one of the best hitters on the team this year. Then you look at the numbers and you go, oof, actually not really. Yeah, the home runs are there, but average is down, probably leads the team in strikeouts, doesn't walk, you know. So it's just kind of the whole experience with him. It's why the Cardinals gave up on him. And at this point, you're just trying to squeeze as much juice out of that orange as you can, because as Jeremy said, there's no organizational depth, especially when it comes to right-handed power hitting. You have zero coming up in your system. It's all left-handed guys. So, and as we know, they're not coming up this year. They're all going to stay in Worcester and in Portland and mash down there, and they're going to leave the major league team to rot. So Tyler O'Neill, unfortunately, is going to be asked to do, I think, a lot more than he's really capable of this year. But, you know, at the end of the day, he's not a total zero on this team, but when he has series like this where you kind of need those wins and he doesn't deliver in a couple of those games, it stands out a lot more. So
from
good. Terry, no, you go. I got to look something up anyway.
I mean, from my perspective, he's down this series, you know, and he's had down series, but I think he's one of the bigger reasons that we are overachieving technically. Like, the team's 500, we're in it. We could go one way or the other. And I personally think we're going the wrong way, but you know, I think if we look back, we got a tough stretch coming up, but we get to the All-Star break and we're still within three games of the wild card. I think he's going to be a big reason why. And look, he's on pace for 40 home runs. I think we just passed the quarter of the season. Now, he's not going to hit 40 home runs, but if he hits 35 home runs on a team star for home runs, he gives you the Schwarber effect, kind of, where you don't really worry about. Now, Schwarber's an elite on-base guy, so it's not a fair comparison. But as far as power, you know, he's hit some home runs and won some games for us. So, you know, specifically my criticism is he's just cold right now. I like the fact, like you said, Jason, Cora gave him the night off ahead of his homecoming. You know, I expect him to hit this weekend. I do expect him to hit, and maybe in dramatic fashion. I mean, that's the way these things go typically. Did you find what you were looking for, Terrence?
Yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't really bolster my case very much. I'll mention it, but the one nugget, though, that does stand out is for the month of May, and I've been harping on the month of May because that's really been where we've been skidding. O'Neill leads all of Major League Baseball this month with strikeouts. So he's got 25 at the moment. Paul Goldschmidt is 3 strikeouts behind him at 22. Andy Pages, never really heard of him. He's a right fielder for the Dodgers. He's right there as well. I was wondering, I wanted to look up Adam Duvall's stats because I'm like, man, should we have just stuck with him for basically the same money? But he's not had a great start. He's hitting .210, only 2 dingers. His on base is 100 points higher than his average, but that's still at that with those numbers, it wouldn't have helped.
Look, if he hits 40 bombs, I don't care how many times he strikes out.
He won't. Neither will.
I agree with you. I'm just saying, yeah. If he does, I won't care.
Right, because that's Kyle Schwarber, and I'm not. I like Schwarber myself, so especially
me
in
too.
The month
big,
of October.
Big Schwarber guy.
Yeah. I would have gave him that same deal, honestly.
100%.
Yeah.
But what we didn't know at the time, or what we should have known but didn't know yet, is the organization was never going to pay.
No,
they were already going with the Bloom plan at that point.
Nick Castellanos is the other guy. Not everyone on the crew agrees with me, but he's got great power numbers, and, you know, people complain about the defense. But another guy, Dombrowski, snagged, that's working out very well for Philly.
Agreed.
That was going to be my point, is if O'Neill does what Schwarber does and what Renfro did 2 years ago, then don't worry about it, because the organization won't keep him anyway, because they won't want to pay him. So if you're frustrated with Tyler O'Neill, don't worry. It's just 1 year, because they won't pay him if he hits close to 30 home runs. So
agreed.
Won't be a problem after this year. with that, we'll keep moving along. Terry, who do we got coming in at number three on our bottom five?
Number three is going to be Alex Cora. A couple of things, but primarily the load management here is pretty intense. Tanner Houck was left out there for 112 pitches in game three. In his previous start, he was also pitching in the seventh inning with the Sox down a run. They still sent him out there. And why that's a big concern to me is he's at 45 innings pitched so far this year. The most he's ever pitched at any point in his career was 119 innings. And you got to go all the way back to 2018 in single-A Salem. When he last pitched that much. So I just, I'm extremely pessimistic for what August and September are going to look like for him. Hopefully we don't mess up his arm at all, but I'm just not thrilled with that. And then tonight, you know, this isn't really a big thing, but the Red Sox were getting to Jason Adam, who was at 23 pitches. There was nobody warming up in the pen. And Cora made an issue of, and rightfully so. I mean, the Rays had violated the rules where they didn't have any mound visits left, so that ended up taking Adam out of the game. It put Erasmo Ramirez in, and then a couple pitches into that at bat. I forget who that was. Might have been
Romy.
Oh, it was Romy. Yeah, because he pinch hit. Yeah, he just got a comebacker, and the game was over. Just killed the momentum. So, but the load management really is a concern to me. And last year we saw Cutter Crawford. He had never pitched that much, and by mid-August he had lost 3 or 4 miles an hour of velocity on his arm and caused his numbers to be inflated a little bit by the end of the season. So. Don't love it.
Terry, do you think you got to find out what you have in Houck if you're going to potentially pay him to keep him?
Well, I mean, I think we've essentially figured it out. The big mystery here is, can he pitch 150 innings? That's the only box left to check off for me.
So I disagree. Because if you're going to pay someone $300 million, which I'm not saying he's worth that yet, but
he won't.
His ERA is 2.17. If he throws 165, 185 innings, and he's a, you know, three or lower, he's going to get paid big. And I'm look up Spotrac in a minute on his contract, but I don't look at Crawford the same way I look at Houck. Like, Crawford's a middle of the road. We've talked about this the last time I was on. He's a middle of the rotation guy. He's pitching great. He's out of his mind. That's not who he is. He's not, I mean, he's not going to go to a five, but he's not a 2.24 either. I'd like to see what we got in the guy. And our starting pitching provides us the best opportunity to win ball games. And I don't have an issue with the number of innings thrown on the season. I don't love 112 pitches yesterday. You know, so I'm kind of taking both sides of the fence a little bit here. I have another issue, Terry, with Cora. I mean, you didn't bring it up, but I'm going to go there here a little bit. And I'm going to keep it very brief because I've been on this relentlessly. He split the game with the catchers. And they're throwing – I'm not talking about defense because both guys are throwing guys out. It's unbelievable. They showed a stat today of the last 12 attempted base stealers, 8 have been thrown out, which is insane in modern Major League Baseball. I mean, obviously, they're not going to stay at that pace. McGuire's 0 for 8. You know, Wong's 3 for 11, which is, you know, but he's the better defender, more athletic. I just don't know why they're doing the load management with Wong, because you obviously value Wong more. You're hitting him third in the lineup now. It just doesn't make any sense. So, I mean, now I'm going to save my commentary on the end of Thursday night's game because, spoiler alert, the program's tweet about Cora being the reason why that went the wrong way is a clown take.
It was a momentum killer. I mean, we can't dispute that.
Terry, don't bait me. Okay. You're baiting me. I just said it's going to be my clown take. Don't bait me.
All right. Go ahead, Jason. let me just say because Jason still has to give his take, but with Houck's contract situation, it's a little different for him because he came up so much later. So he's not going to be a free agent until he's 32. So I wouldn't really go crazy like we did with Bayo here and just back up the Brinks truck, because chances are you're going to get him on a pretty reasonable deal at that point.
Can I just have a little anecdote that doesn't have really much to do with anything for what we're talking about? But the Red Sox are – Tanner Houck's 3-5. That's mind-blowing.
No run
support.
I remember
some years when Pedro was like a sub-2 ERA and they would only score like 1.3 runs per start. Like, he has one game where he wasn't in the decision. So I don't remember if they won or lost that game, but you got to win the Tanner Houck starts. You have to win the Tanner Houck starts if you're going to stay in this. For him to be 3-5 is just utterly ridiculous. Anyways, I said anecdote. Jason.
He hasn't won a game since the Maddox game, by the way. He's 0-5 since then.
I mean, it's you have to win these games. You have to.
It's so
frustrating.
He's going through. You mentioned it, Pedro went through it. I think John Lackey, one of his better years here, he went through the same thing. He got no run support. His record was all wonky because of it. When the offense sputters, that's what happens. But to get back to Cora, I know the bullpen was taxed from game 2. And I know the Red Sox are in a tough stretch right now where they haven't had an off day. They're not going to get one, you know, on Friday. They're going right into another series. They have to fly to St. Louis. So I get that Cora is doing his best to kind of not, you know, overtax the bullpen. And Tanner Houck's your ace. So he said, you know what, I'm going to leave him out there for 112. I just, with all the injuries you've already had on the pitching staff, with injuries to pitchers just increasing in general around baseball, you're finally tapping in to Tanner Houck's best potential, the best version of himself, something that we've been waiting for years. And in a game in mid-May, you're going to stretch him to 112 pitches? I get it. He's trying to win. It's one of those things where I tweeted out at the time. I was like, I get it. I'm not the manager. He is. I know. But I'm sitting there going, man, 112 pitches for Tanner Houck, who you've been waiting on this guy for so many years, and you're going to stretch him that far in the middle of May? You got a whole season ahead of you? Like, oof. That's tough. And then what Jeremy brought up with the catching tandem, like, why are we still going every other day with these guys? And I'm not telling you McGuire's been, like, awful, but he's not hitting anymore. He can still throw runners out, which is good, but he's not hitting. Connor Wong is entering his prime. And Connor Wong, you know, to start the year, and actually even still to this day, like, looks like he might be primed for one of his better years. And most teams don't just straight up platoon catchers. They don't go every other day. One guy gets a brunt and then, you know, he plays whatever, 120 games. The other guy plays 42. It's, you know, that's the way most other teams do it. If Connor Wong's the guy, and they believe in him, which they should, he should be getting the lion's share behind the plate. He's the better defensive catcher, and he's the better hitter right now. And he's a right-handed power bat, something that you need more of in this lineup. And he's shown that he's not just one of these right-handed bats that can only hit lefties. He can hit from both sides. He can hit both arms is what I mean. So I just – that combined with, like, giving guys days off at random times, I'm still just not sold on Cora in general. I've very much come to accept and sort of welcome the fact that he's going to walk after this year. I think it's probably time for a new voice in that clubhouse. I'm not sure he's reaching as many players on this team as he used to. So I know, Jeremy, you're shaking your head. I just, and I'm not saying that he's a bad manager. He's probably top 10. He's wherever he goes next, he's going to have success. I just, there are just certain things that I look at and I'm like, I don't know. I think I'm ready to move on.
So anecdote on the Hauk thing, just as a general to extrapolate a little bit further, we had 5 unearned runs. It was 20-16. If you catch the ball, I'm not saying it goes the exact same way, but we scored 16 runs. Could have been a little bit different. But Cora's, the change needs to become, I'm not going to do it again. I do it every week. The change has to come from ownership. Cora, if you just, you can't say we should move on from a top 10 manager. I just, there has to be changes to the big league talent to the point where we're basically driving off, to use Jason's analysis, not mine, a top 10, because I think he's higher, a top 10 manager. It's ridiculous. And I'm not going to go into the McGuire Wong thing any more than I have. But here's Wong's numbers. He's hitting 340, on base at 370, slugging 530 with a 900 OPS, 5 home runs and 15 RBIs, and he's splitting duty. It's, don't even apply baseball. It's just not logical. It's ridiculous. And like, what are you worried about? He's not a pitcher. We're not going to get Tommy John, I don't think. I mean, it happens in position players, but like, what's the concern? Like, what's the concern? Play the guy. It's ridiculous. And I'll leave it at that because I hit it every time I talk about him.
It's funny because we're hopping all over the place here, and I want to hop it back to Hauk. We're 500 at the moment. Other than this Cardinal series, which we have up next, that's where they're headed right now as we speak. The rest of the month is brutal, and June doesn't look good, and we're not making the playoffs anyway. So why do, like, I don't want to blow out Tanner Houck's arm for a season like this. Like, it's just not worth it to me. If the bullpen's taxed, I still prioritize Houck's arm over a taxed bullpen. I don't care. Put Chase Anderson in there for 3 or 4 innings.
So two things on that quickly. One, I don't care how many pitches he throws. I'm sorry, how many innings he throws. If you keep him at 90 to like 102. So if he's throwing 90 to 100 pitches a night and he ends up at 180 innings and he's healthy,
that would be extremely encouraging. That's the best case scenario.
Right. But so I don't have a problem with that. Here's my concern with where we're at, just big picture. Even if we're still in it, I think it's irresponsible of Breslow to not sell at the deadline. We've got expiring contracts. You know, O'Neill's going to be desirable. I think we're going to talk about Kenley Jansen. I think he should already be gone. I thought he should have been gone in the offseason. There's going to be subtractions from this roster to add youth. And so even if we're in it, we're going to take a step back because all of a sudden we got to fill those positions with guys that aren't ready. And the whole thing, even if we survive the next 45 days, it's still setting up to be a total dumpster fire the second half of the year, after the trade deadline. You know, and I know this particular recording is not about that, but just a little, another, I'm going to have my third anecdote of the recording here. I'm already like pre-frustrated and upset about it because I think I'm right.
Jeremy's nickname now is the pharmacist with all of his anecdotes. One last thing about Hauk. I'm just so fixated on Hauk for some reason. But
you can't make fun of me for anecdotes and then come at me with another anecdote yourself. Know. That's not how this works.
I need to take a pill or something. But here's just a pattern so far. He had back-to-back starts against the Anaheim Angels, was six innings scoreless in one, faced them 5 days later, gave up 12 hits, four earned runs. That was his worst start of the year. So the rematch, he wasn't nearly as good. Then in the first Cleveland game, he has the Maddox game, as it's been called on social media. Nine innings pitched, complete game. Only gave up three hits, struck out nine. 5 days later, he rematches them. Wasn't terrible, but lasted six innings, gave up five hits, walked three, which was a stark contrast from the first game, and then struck out four. And the reason I'm pointing this out is because his next start, I believe, will be against Tampa, if I'm not mistaken. So, and Tampa is hell on our pitching staff. They're just tailor-made to be patient, take pitches. And if we're throwing 70% off speed like we are, if we're not commanding them, they're going to make us pay. So I don't love that.
Yeah, for sure. And that's, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see how Hauk does the second time around against Tampa. Back in, you know, he'll be in the Trop for that start next week. So, but yeah, certainly. Between Hauk, the management with the pitching, between the catching tandem, all that, a lot to get into on Cora, and this is just scratching the surface. As Jeremy said, we'll have a lot more on the manager coming up in the next couple of days, so stay tuned for that. But for now, we will keep moving with our bottom five, and coming in at number two is the Wonder Man himself, Sedan Rafaela. And I say that a little tongue-in-cheek because – obviously, he's a rookie. He's had a very slow start to his season. Got this big extension from the Red Sox, was, you know, a big talking point for a number of weeks because of that. But he's still just not producing at the major league level. And it's offensively and defensively. So defensively, he, you know, botches a diving catch in center field. There's a lot more that I want to get into on that. Spoiler alert, that's also coming later. I got a lot more thoughts on that, but he does that. He's made a bunch of throwing errors. He has eight errors on the season combined between shortstop and center field. And the shortstop numbers are really bad because he's got a -2 defensive run saved there so far. So all this talk about, well, Story's out, Rafaela's going to stabilize the shortstop position. He's made some nice plays there. But he's also made a lot of bad ones, a lot of bad throws. When you've got Jim Rice clowning you on the postgame show saying, I don't understand why a shortstop can't just throw the ball to first base without it bouncing in the dirt, that's not good. So that's been a problem. But also at the plate, he's 1-for-13 this series. He's still not figuring it out offensively. And again, it goes back to your poor roster construction, your flawed roster, the fact that Trevor Story goes down, which, as I've said since it happened, I could have told you Trevor Story was going to spend time on the IL this year. Now, I didn't expect it to be a season-ending injury, but given his history, anyone could have told you, anyone with half a brain could have told you that Trevor Story was going to end up spending a lot of time on the IL this year. And the Red Sox did nothing to address in terms of getting a veteran, decent backup middle infielder in case of that eventuality. They didn't do it. Instead, it's David Hamilton. It was Emmanuel Valdez for a while. Now it's Romy Gonzalez, who they're now throwing at first base. Like, it's just more just throwing crap at the wall. They should have just gone out and gotten a Ahmed Rosario like the Rays did. Or they should have gotten Brandon Crawford like the Cardinals did. You'll probably see him this weekend. Instead, it's no, let's take our newest sensation, who's supposed to be a center fielder, and put him at shortstop. It's not working. The defense, again, he'll make a good play every now and then. He made a nice diving stop in the finale, but he's also making throwing errors, and he's just in general not helping you at the plate. So I want to be patient with him. I think we've talked about this on the show. I think at this point, you can't really send him down because you just have to wait for him to figure it out and hope that he does at the major league level. And also, like, who the hell are you going to call up at this point? Are you going to call Valdez back up and have David Hamilton play shortstop every day? That's a nightmare. So I'm hoping that Rafaela figures it out. It's only the middle of May, so he's got plenty of time. But, you know, can we just stop praising every single thing this kid does and start actually looking at it being like, no, you need to be better. Like, it's tough. I know it's that seems really harsh. He's a rookie, but you gave him the contract extension. You're moving him to shortstop. You're telling him you're the everyday shortstop. Make the plays. Stop making throwing errors and wake up a little bit at the plate because, you know, they need him to get going a little bit. So it's harsh. I know, but like it's more just I'm annoyed with, you know, he's like the golden boy. Just he can do no wrong when at the end of the day, he's actually costing you games in some places. And I just wish that fans would acknowledge that more.
Jason, where are you getting the he's the golden boy thing? Like who's is that just are you saying generally speaking Red Sox Nation?
Oh, it's a large portion. It's the kids table. It's the Milikens. It's, you know, the Ed Hands. It's the Section 10 crew. You know, just let's just make – I mean, there was literally a tweet from Milliken tonight where it was like, yes, he made a bad throwing error earlier that cost you runs, but, man, look at this diving play. I don't care about the diving play. You're down 4-1. I don't care.
So, spoiler alert, he's not going to hit. He's not going to hit. And on this roster with where we're going anyways, I think he is in a spot to grow and learn and develop at the big league level. You add in the contract and it's like a virtual guarantee. He is so exciting defensively. And I know he's making mistakes. And I think the mistakes at shortstop just highlight the fact that in an ideal situation, he's our center fielder and he is just unbelievable. The ball gets hit especially hard to center in the gap. You're like, oh, let's see what happens here. You know, and the play that he almost made is an example of that. I like the player. I'm excited to watch him develop at the big league player because at the big league level, because if he was in Worcester or Portland, we don't get to see him play. And he is that exciting. Now, I'm not going to go, and I'm a Milliken guy, but I'm not going to go the Milliken route with it and turn an opportunity to make a play that wasn't made into some sort of positive. But, you know, I might say something like, how many players get their glove on that ball? You know, probably not many. But I think once you put yourself in the position to make the play, you should probably make it, you know? But, you know, like I've resigned myself to the fact that he's not going to hit. He's not our shortstop. He's not going to be a shortstop next year, hopefully. If you ever have to do it again, it's in an emergency basis. I think he could be a better defender than Bradley, especially at tracking down balls that should be hits. And I don't know where he's going to be offensively because he's such an elite athlete. Like, again, I mentioned this on this program. He feels like a guy that if he picked a different sport, he'd be in the NFL or he'd be in the NBA or, you know, I don't – whatever. Like, whatever he wanted to do, he's like just that athletic. So he's so much fun to watch. It's not – something we get to see in Boston very often where you get to see a player develop at the big league level and actually watch him hopefully grow and get better. So I agree with the fact that he's on the five down list, but I'm in the middle between, you know, a little bit of what you're saying, Jason, and the Milliken crowd, you know, so he's exciting, but I understand that he's not, you know, he's causing more problems than he's fixing right now, especially shortstop. You play him in center, he's fixing some problems.
Terry.
So – he was 1 for 13, and that sucks. You know, his one hit was a home run. It was sort of pivotal because it came in the game we won, which happened to be by one run. The one thing that does stand out for me is that of the 12 times he didn't reach base, only one of those 12 was a strikeout. So the strikeouts haven't been as glaring of a problem. Going back to the last series, he, I forget who that was even against. He was 2 for 9. Still, the strikeouts weren't a big deal. I think part of the problem here is it's not an environment that's conducive to growth right now. There's a lot of stress. There's a lot of constant changes in alignments and philosophy. And when Mookie Betts came up, he was an outfielder, and that was that. When they did mess with Bogarts, they had him at third base a few times in the month of April in his rookie year. But besides that, he was the shortstop, and he just was able to figure it out, you know, offensively and defensively. So I hate that some of these kids are in this situation. I think we're too young. I mean, Jaren Duran, I guess you can say he's proven himself. Last year was a breakout year, so. But you've got Abreu, who's coming up. Grissom, who's never really established himself. Rafaela still hasn't established himself. Hamilton, at times. When one third of your lineup is made up of those types of players, and they're all hitting in the lower half, it's gonna be tough. It's going to be tough to keep the line moving offensively during the games, because after Devers, you're not getting much. You're not getting much offensively until it gets back to Duran at the top of the order. So I just hate that this is the position we're putting them in. And we've got three stud prospects that are going to come up, and that's even more of your lineup that's trying to figure it out. You need your veterans. You need balance. And right now, we don't have that.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I don't want to make it sound like I'm not rooting for him to succeed. Obviously, I want the kid to succeed and figure it out, start hitting, start playing great defense too. I'm just – it's frustrating when you see, like, plays not being made, and yet there's still, like, just praise all around. It's like, can we deal with reality for a hot second, you know, and realize where the team's actually at? But like I said, you know, hopefully things get better as time goes on with him. But right now he's definitely feeling it a little bit. So with that, we will round out our bottom five with number one on the list. Jeremy, who do we got?
Kenley Jansen. I've said this word like six times already. It's just incredibly frustrating to fight back from the 5-1 hole to just put a non-competitive half inning together. You know, so tonight, one inning, two hits, two runs, both earned, walk, two Ks on 18 pitches, ran his ERA up to 3.4. His whip is now up to 1.34, which is the highest of anybody that pitched in the series. On the entire, you know, for the whole entire Red Sox. I don't know why he's here. I mean, he's not going to finish the season with the Red Sox. And Breslow is obviously in a very difficult position because he wants to move him. He wants to get the highest value trade he possibly can. So he stays, and he's just a big reason why you've lost some games. And I'm just over it. I'm just incredibly over it. Like, get what you can, call the other clubs, get the best prospect, and move on. It's just, you know, maybe he's waiting for an injury. Like, I don't know, but I'm just over it with this player. I spoken on a number of topics on other versions of this podcast about how I don't think he came in ready to be an effective player. I think he came in out of shape. I don't think he's in shape. I don't, drives me nuts when professional athletes don't take care of themselves. You know, some comments in the off season, I'm not going to go over it all again, but it just, I'd say frustrated, but honestly, I'm over it. Like, just get him out of town. I'll drive him to Logan, you know, but like, let's just move on, please.
Terry.
Well, as I've said throughout the season, in terms of unlikability, he's right up there with Alfredo Aceves. And after the second week of April, Kenley Jansen was never going to win back this fan base. It was just never going to happen. And he never, even last year when things weren't terrible, he didn't really endear himself to us. But it was a terrible outing. I mean, he came in, did get Josh Lowe out on a strikeout, but then walked Randy Arozarena. Jonathan Aranda hit a single, and Arozarena was running. I don't know if that was a hit-and-run type thing or if he was legitimately trying to steal, but either way, he ends up at third. Isaac Paredes drives him in, and then Richie Palacios drives in Aranda on a sac fly. So that's how those two runs came up, and two runs is massive when your offense is as anemic as ours is. So you kind of had a feeling that, you know, that was probably going to be the game. But Jansen's kryptonite is anybody on first base. As soon as anyone's on first, he's got to change his delivery. The stress level goes up, and he's a much different pitcher. If he can keep anybody from reaching, he's fine. He's extremely serviceable. His ERA was down to 2.46 coming into this game, which quietly was very good. You know, it feels like it should be higher than that, but finally, you know, this pesky offense, you know, kind of put a couple of runs up on him, and his likability factor probably dropped a little. And I'd be curious to see what his post game comments were. We kind of jumped on here and started recording, but I'm certainly looking forward to the Kenley Jansen era ending. Here's the bad news though. As we get closer to the deadline, Chris Martin's going to get the bigger haul. Like, if you want assets, he's going to be the guy that gets it for you.
Go ahead, Jason. I have a question for the group, but I'm going to wait until after you're done.
Yeah, so it's never a good feeling when, as a fan, you're watching your closer warm up in the bullpen, regardless of the situation, and you say out loud to yourself, oh, no. Because that's what it was in that last game against Tampa. It was, you saw him warming up, game was tied, and I went, oh, geez. This isn't going to go well. Kenley in a non-save situation, he doesn't give a crap when it's a save situation. He's definitely not going to give a crap in a non-save situation. And that was the most I don't give an F inning that I've ever seen from a major league pitcher. It was just, he went out there just throwing his cutter down the middle of the plate and hoping for the best. The pitches he threw, especially to Paredes and to Palacios, the ones that drove in the runs, right down the pipe. It was like, got a couple runners on base and he was like, screw this. I don't care. Just, you know, let's just get out of this inning as fast as possible. I mean, we ask the question every week. I have no idea why this guy's still here. And I know that, you know, as Jeremy said, Breslow's hoping to maximize value, get the most for him, hoping that Jansen's numbers are pretty good by the All-Star break and he can get a decent haul for him. But at this point, I'd rather just move on, bite the bullet, get what you can for him now. Maybe find a team that their closer situation isn't as stable as they maybe thought it would be. And, you know, it's a team that's kind of borderline contending and they're just desperate to get someone else in there. Maybe do something like that, get the deal done early. But I can't imagine this guy's a good influence in that clubhouse right now because he just does not care and he clearly doesn't want to be here. So I'm hoping I don't watch too many more Kenley Jansen outings, but I have a feeling I'm not going to get what I want.
Here's the question, guys. Is there an interest level issue because he's chasing the record in non-save situations like tonight?
I would not be surprised if that plays into it. Given his age, given the fact that, I mean, if you look at just, yeah, if you look at his age combined with just the fact that, like you said, I don't think he showed up to, you know, to spring training in shape. He's kind of just chasing this record. Like, I wouldn't be surprised. Just like, just get me there and I'm done. He's had heart issues before. You know, he's on the last year of a deal that he's earning, you know, $16 million. He's probably not going to get that type of money ever again. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised that plays into it. Yeah, for sure.
I agree with Jason. Yeah,
I agree. Yeah, I really do. And the other thing is, Breslow's going to wait too long in a lat or a groin or shoulder, whatever could be it, the issue, and he's not tradable. So if he's healthy, trade him. It doesn't make any sense. It's going to go the wrong way.
This is what concerns me the most, because if this team really starts to go the other direction, they start to dwell in last place too long and they slip too many games under 500, Kenley will come up with a phantom injury. I mean, he already did that once this season. Oh, my back, because I slept wrong in my Tempur-Pedic.
He can't because he wants – I don't think that's an issue. I'm going to respectfully disagree, because he wants to be gone, and he's not gone if he's hurt. So I think he's going to try to pitch. You know, but what if he does have a real injury? Then you have to – and the ownership doesn't want to spend the money anyways. They've probably already said, like, by the time we get to the halfway point, you got to trade him. And if he's disabled, you can't trade him. So it just it doesn't make sense not to do it now. And yeah, I've said my piece. I'm really tired of Kenley Jansen.
I mean, the time to trade him was in the winter.
Agreed.
And for whatever reason, they didn't do it. And you know, you could have even traded him in spring training, even though he showed up late and, you know, whatever, you still had a chance. You had the warning signs were all there early spring. He still didn't do it. So now it's just like, he's just depreciating in value every day. So, you know, I at this point, that's why I say just bite the bullet. You're not going to get this return, whatever return Breslow thinks he's going to get. You're not getting at this point. Just bite the bullet, get rid of him.
I'm trying to think of some teams that need a closer. I mean, we saw the Rangers get Aroldis Chapman. I think that was last May. It was it was well before the deadline. So there could be a team out there that would bite on it. But admittedly, I know the Astros bullpen is terrible, but I think they're just underachieving in their case. But yeah, we'll see. You probably don't want to trade him to the Orioles, but anyway, like I said in my initial take, I'm just like you guys. I'm just ready for that era to be over.
Yeah, for sure, and certainly ready for all the losing series to be over as well. So hopefully, this time next week, we're talking about a Rays series win as opposed to a loss. But here
funny
we are.
Joke. Funny joke, Jason.
Yeah, I know, right? At this point, it kind of is, yeah. So with that, we will wrap things up. Keep an eye out for our series prediction show. We'll be giving our predictions for the Cardinals series this weekend. That'll be coming your way later on. And also this weekend, we've got another edition of Clown Takes. We already alluded to some of what we'll be talking about in that show, some Alex Cora, some more Sedan Rafaela narratives to go around as well that we're going to hammer on. So keep an eye out for that this weekend as well. And the weekend crew will have you guys Monday morning to recap the Cardinals series. So have a great weekend, everyone, and we'll talk to you later. Take care.